Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's November 21st. 31 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City with some clouds. We've got 30 degrees reported in Heber City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning, Nate.
Good morning, Leslie. Good morning, Wasatch back. Another nice day across much of the state. We've got south flow or southwest flow bringing temperatures up into the weekend. Above average, 50 is expected to be the high today in Park City. Partly cloudy skies will continue. Similar conditions overnight tonight into tomorrow. Lows near 31, highs near 53 on Friday. Partly cloudy again. We do have some changes brewing. Some, I think, much welcome snow in the forecast. We'll see a chance of rain, snow, showers on Saturday, over to snow showers into Sunday, a high of 47 on Saturday, so increasing cloud cover, some breezy winds at times as well. We'll drop to 29 Sunday morning with a high of just 36 on Sunday. So plan on snow showers kicking off that time, and they should stick around off and on through Wednesday with active weather in place. So that atmospheric river that's impacting Northern California, the Pacific Northwest right now, a trough of low pressure Saturday night into Sunday should steer some of that to our direction, and it'll keep the storm door open with a westerly flow, which will keep periods of rain and snow for much of Utah in the forecast through middle of next week. So for Park City, overnight lows near 20. Monday morning, high of just 38, should keep temperatures cold enough for snow showers off and on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Overall estimates are still showing a decent amount of moisture for the mountain areas, 1 to 2 feet for some of the ski resorts, and it should be a healthy storm system for you folks along the Wasatch back as well. We'll kind of fine-tune more of the totals as we get closer, but Heber looking at highs of 56 today, partly cloudy, overnight lows near 21, 58 on your Friday. Temperatures slide to 52, mostly cloudy skies Saturday with showers increasing in the afternoon and evening. Snow expected on Sunday, temperatures near 26 on Sunday morning, high of 42, a bit of a wintry mix possible in the afternoon, and then rain and snow showers expected in Heber off and on through Wednesday as well, with overnight lows in the 20s, but daytime highs in the mid-40s.
Okay, thanks, Nate. Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be talking with Summit County Council Member Candace Hart. We'll be taking a look at the recap from yesterday's meeting. And later on, Park City Interim Superintendent of Schools Caleb Fine and Board of Education Member Meredith Reed recap Tuesday's meeting. And Park City Summit County Arts Council Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder, along with local artist Mark Maziarz, talk about this month's gallery stroll and the opening of the Create PC Holiday Market. And just an update on some of the trails in Round Valley. They are good to go if you go early. The snow covered some dirt. Same with Lost Prospector and Clark Ranch. They are snow covered again with some dirt showing through, so as long as it's freezing, not too bad. And then from the Wasatch Trails Foundation, they have 11 miles of groomed single track for fat biking and snowshoeing, access from a new parking lot off of Highway 32, the Wiley Canyon lot just east towards Camas of the old parking lot. They're asking you not to park at the old lot where construction vehicles are located. The Jordan L. Ridge trails behind UVU are also rideable with some pockets of snow. Best to get out before the thaw. Taking a look at some local news now, a Park City parent says the school board tried to prevent her from speaking at a public meeting. However, the school board president says he was following district policy. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on this heated exchange.
Park City parent Alicia Gorder said she went to Tuesday's board meeting to share her concerns about compensation packages for district leaders. She said she registered to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting, following the district's required procedure. But she says the board skipped her during the time set aside for public comment.
I was the first person to sign up today, and my request to speak in public comment was actually taken off the table.
Gorder had written on her public comment registration document that she wanted to discuss a recent Park Record article questioning the compensation of a few school district staff members. Board President Andrew Kaplan said Gorder was not recognized to speak because he believed the comments she wanted to make were about personnel. According to the district's policy, the public comment period is, quote, not the place to address a personal matter or a complaint. But Gorder said she wanted to comment on other district matters as well.
When I saw we passed public comment in the agenda, I went up and asked if I was going to actually get a chance to speak.
Gorder agreed not to comment on personnel and was given the allotted 3 minutes for public comment toward the end of the meeting. She said she was worried the district was wasting taxpayer dollars. Gorder also said it was inappropriate for Kaplan to have made disparaging remarks during the meeting about Michelle Deininger, a former KPCW news director who wrote the Park Record article. Kaplan interrupted Gorder to say the article was inaccurate.
I have no comment, but the district will be responding in kind to the Park Record for the inaccuracies that were in that article.
It's unclear to me that they're inaccurate because they were
And you know, what, this is what I'll say. We live in a small community.
Yes.
Welcome, you've been here 3 years. That's wonderful. We've been serving this community. You know, Mr. Tanner's been serving this community
for over five years. I've lived in and served in other communities.
Okay,
so
that's wonderful.
You
know, that's wonderful. Here's the history.
But I disagree.
May I speak? No.
I thought it was
Your time is over. Thank you very much.
This is your time.
During their exchange, the timer went off, indicating Gorder's 3 minutes for public comment had ended. However, Gorder continued, saying she was not given her full time because Kaplan had cut her off.
You are out of line, please.
No, I'm not.
Your time is
this
over.
This is my right.
No, your time is over. You have 3 minutes. Your 3 minutes is up.
You can stop this any way you'd like to.
Gorder and Kaplan continued to talk over each other until Gorder was escorted out of the meeting by a district employee. Outside the meeting, Gorder told KPCW she was upset she wasn't allowed the full 3 minutes to comment.
Typically, during public comment, every speaker is given 3 uninterrupted minutes to speak, and there isn't any back and forth because they want the meeting to flow very smoothly, which is what we all want.
According to district policy, speakers are limited to 3 minutes to make their statements. District policy also states, quote, public comment shall not be a time for board members to answer questions posed to them from a speaker or comment on a speaker's concerns. However, board members are allowed to, quote, interrupt, warn, or terminate a participant's statement when the statement is too lengthy, personally directed, abusive, obscene, or irrelevant. Kaplan, Board Vice President Wendy Crossland, and Board Member Ann Peters did not run for re-election in November. Voters chose Susan Goldberg, Eileen Gallagher, and Kathleen Britton to replace them in January. To watch the full public comment portion of the meeting, go to kpcw.org. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
On the phone now with an update from yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Councilmember Candace Hart. Good morning, Candace.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's start with Dakota Pacific. The council now discussing units with Dakota Pacific Real Estate, hoping to develop a neighborhood in Kimball Junction, as well as partner on an expanded transit center and some civic spaces along State Route 224. Dakota Pacific CEO Mark Stanwer told the council he doesn't think framing the talks as a negotiation is correct. That's because he says they're giving you their best offer, their best assessment of what is economically possible. So is he right here?
Oh, I'd have to say it's been 5 years of negotiations. It certainly feels like a negotiation to me. Not to push back against what Mark is saying, I suppose, but I mean, the reality is we are absolutely in the middle of negotiating.
Yeah, council brought numerous counterproposals last winter. Does the council plan to bring a counterproposal before taking a vote next month?
What we've been really working to do is to have Dakota Pacific refine their proposal so we could vote on it. So I don't think we're going to see a lot more back and forth. I think we're going to kind of tighten up what their offer is to make sure it's very clear and it's well documented, and then the council will vote. And we don't have a date that we're going to vote, but we're trying to get it done in December. So probably sooner rather than later, because as crazy as it may seem, this has been going on for 5 years. The council's actually never voted. And so we need to get to doing that before the end of the year if we can.
Yeah, and will Councilmember Chris Robinson be voting on this project? As you may know, at least one resident very concerned that he believes Councilmember Robinson has a conflict of interest. Robinson has disclosed a longtime relationship with the developer and his friendships with principals at Dakota Pacific. So given that relationship and the fact that he had recused himself before after accepting some expensive sporting tickets from Dakota Pacific, should he be involved?
Yeah, I will say that I know I'm aware of the letter that I believe you received in other press. Not all of the council received it, but it was then forwarded to us. Mr. Novak had written a letter. The county attorney responded directly to Mr. Novak, and I don't think she would have copied anyone outside of that. But it was ruled, mind you, obviously this goes back before us on council, but it was ruled back then that Mr. Robinson or Councilman Robinson did not need to recuse himself. And like things like the tickets, he had paid cash for it and stuff like that. So I don't know all the details. I would obviously have to kind of refer you to the county attorney, but I believe Ms. Olson has already responded to Mr. Novak.
All right. Let's move on to the Housing Authority. Housing and Economic Development Director Jeff Jones presenting more housing statistics and the possibility of creating a Summit County Housing Authority. You were one of the council members fully in favor of forming one yesterday. Why is this something you support?
It's a really useful tool for the county and really for cities to have. And we looked at doing one in partnership with Park City Municipal before. That did not go forward, but the county still has the need. And what it allows us to do is to really access, I mean, it does a few things, but you can really start to access federal funding. So it's a great funding mechanism. If a housing authority wants us up and running, you know, this would take some time, but then they tend to manage the properties that we have in that portfolio. They do, opposed to the county. So you don't really want politicians and the government managing it. You want the housing authority doing that. They take the revenue that comes in, and that's how they fund future projects. So in a large, one a simple way of saying it is, it gets it out of the hands of politicians and puts it in the hands of experts that manage it. It also creates a very kind of neutral clearinghouse. So we're, you know, regardless of which nonprofit you are, if you're trying to get some affordable housing developed, that becomes sort of the central point of the clearinghouse. And it makes kind of an even playing field for everybody. So there's really some nice benefits all around for us.
Yeah, so by creating a housing authority, does the county become a developer?
Well, no, because the housing authority, well, it's, I guess it depends how one looks at it. The housing authority could become a developer. They can develop land, but it's not the county. So when you create the housing authority, it's like standing up a new nonprofit in a way. It's created out of the county. It then becomes its own entity. It would have like its own executive director and eventually staff. At this stage, though, this is just the first round of starting it. I think it's like talking about Jeff or Mr. Jones having another employee in his office to help get it started. So I would anticipate it's like, you know, it's going to take a few years before this thing's really up and running. In the meantime, we have a service agreement with Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust, and we'll continue to work with Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust. Great partners. They do great work. So you'll see a kind of like a parallel action, and I'm not sure what it will evolve into in the future. But so it's kind of a yes or no answer to your question, Leslie.
Yeah. You did express some concern about redundancy with Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust. Can you explain where there might be some overlap and why that's a problem?
Yeah, well, I don't think we have a problem today. And I was really trying to just hear, I wanted to hear Jeff's thoughts, and I'm sure this will evolve. But so as the example, Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust will manage housing units that are affordable on the behalf of the county. Well, once you have a housing authority, that's its role to do that. So that's really just direct redundancy. But, you know, like we were just saying, the housing authorities can take some time to stand up. Now, interestingly enough, what a housing authority could do is contract with Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust to continue to perform that role. So they don't have to necessarily hire staff in the housing authority and do it themselves. They could really just contract it out. So a lot of it's going to really evolve. But I wanted to understand, if we're forming this housing authority, how do we anticipate this looking in the future? And it didn't sound like they had a formed opinion on it. So we'll have to see. I'm sure it's going to be ongoing conversations to figure that out.
Yeah. And then what needs to be done to form a housing authority?
If I remember correctly from the joint work we did with Park City Municipal, it's essentially a resolution that the county council will adopt. And then that resolution is what empowers the formation of the housing authority. Jeff was asking for funds, you know, like he was saying it could be as much as $250,000. But right now he just needs some money to get an employee going to kind of get the groundwork established, if you will. So you would basically do the resolution. You would allocate some funds to get them off the ground. And then they would really, they have to become self-funding after that.
Yeah. And housing authorities can look very different in different areas. As we know, the housing authority for Park City, it's basically the Park City Council members that make that up. Well, some counties look different. I mean, talking about what it sounds like, not political. You had said maybe what, one or two council members. We've got some financial, housing, and planning experts that make up the rest of that board.
Yeah, this is definitely something that will get worked out. But what I've learned when I was on that committee, the joint, when we working with Park City Municipal, is the more you can remove the politicians, the better. Because one of the problems is you take something like housing and affordable housing, and then as new politicians come in and out of office, it swings that entire mission statement. And so it's not a very effective way if you want to really produce affordable housing. So it's better that it's an independent group of people. So I do not anticipate, or I would not encourage us to put politicians on that board, meaning council members like myself and others. I would try to get staff or other people from the public to be on the board opposed to us.
All right. So it sounds like moving forward with this, all the earlier plans for a regional housing authority sound like they're off the table.
I don't know. For us, we're open to it. Like, you know, I mean, we would invite if Park City Municipal or Camas or Colville or any other municipality wants to join in. The way we look at it from the county perspective, everybody's part of the county and we just want to try to help as many people as we can. So doors wide open from our perspective. Please come join us if, you know, and we're going to keep moving forward and get to the business of producing some affordable housing for people.
All right, moving on. Service Area 8, this is really interesting. The council discussed this area, which maintains Chalk Creek Road. We've reported 9 or so residents are paying thousands of dollars to keep this road open. The problem with their property taxes versus the oil fields up there, which are assessed by the state. So why not just expand the service area, or why can't the county just take it over?
Well, that's what we're talking about doing, actually. Like, in the end, what we're proposing to do, it's more just timing when you do it, but you have either they're a service area and then they pay, or we bring, absorb them into the county and then it gets paid for out of the municipal fund. So to do that, if we go that route, which seems to be like, we wouldn't create that service area today. Like, if someone said, do you want to create service area 8, there would be no reason. This is a byproduct or a leftover from sort of the gas boom of the 80s when they created this, and they had lots of trucks going up, and the centrally assessed area by the state actually was paying for most of it. And then fast forward today, where most of it's on pipelines, you don't have trucks and the values have gone down, we just wouldn't create it. So really you want to bring it into the municipal fund, but we're already past that for 2025 because we've already gone past truth and taxation dates. So really the first time we can do it is 2026, and so now we have to look at, all right, well, how do we help these people out through 2025? And the proposal that Mr. Angel or John Angel gave us was he can reduce the cost by a third. It won't have a dramatic impact on the service in this next calendar year. And then that would allow us to see how that's working. And then we can choose in a timely manner to pick it up the next year where we incorporate them back into the municipal fund.
Now, are these the same folks that said that they did not want that road to go all the way through to 150, Highway 150?
I'm not sure, but it's so well established the way it is. Mm-hmm. When you're on that road, I ride it a lot, actually, and it's a really well-maintained dirt road that goes all the way to 150. So I'm not sure how you would stop that, but I'm honestly not aware of that.
All right. So is this service area just an arm of Public Works, or do they actually have a board of trustees?
No, it is more like an arm. It's like we have Service Area 6, which is actually a really well-functioning one. I live in Service Area 6. So these areas, in fact, we tend to incorporate, this is more on the basin side, but we tend to incorporate various properties that have to be like subdivisions, technically, to be in them. But they get incorporated into the service area, and then that cost is spread out amongst everybody within it. So like in Service Area 6, nobody would think to complain about it because it just generally functions well. It doesn't cost us a lot of money, and it really just funds the maintenance that's happening in those areas. It's just Service Area 8, this one in, I guess we're on the east side, it's Chalk Creek Road. There's so few people, and it's just so expensive to fund that maintenance of that road. But like I said, you know, back in the day when it was the gas pipe, you know, the gas boom, and they had so many trucks on it, it took care of itself. It just doesn't make sense today.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the budget. You got some presentations from the county facilities and IT departments about how they're keeping costs to a minimum. What's your impression of this series of peak performance presentations? I mean, do they justify this higher budget?
Well, it's a good question. The peak performance presentations is kind of the centerpiece to what most people are presenting. Everybody, you know, from the clerk's office to, I mean, every department has presented their this exercise. I would say the exercise of peak performance is a good one regardless of whether you're talking about budget or not. It's really looking at how do you make your department more efficient. And there's a process they went through, but and they had consultants that came in and helped them out. But it's been what's really been interesting is to hear from the department heads and the leaders, like how they have found ways to be more efficient that they weren't even aware of at the time. So that part's been really good as it relates to the budget. I think what we're seeing is from the county manager, we're setting this up where he's justifying the budget that they've proposed to us. And we'll get to that, I think, here in the next meeting or two, where we'll have to choose to approve the budget or not.
All right. Again, we've got a balanced budget because the new sales tax passed, is that correct?
Yes, if we go with it as is, as proposed, we would not need to raise, we've already made the decision not to raise property taxes. You know, I know that can get confusing because sometimes our property taxes go up based on, like my home has gone up last 3 years in a row because of my property valuation, but the council has not raised property tax since 2017, and we chose not to do it again. Thankfully, 73% of the populace or the voters chose to support, you know, the first responders and the impacts of tourism, and then that's alleviated the pressure on the general budget.
All right. East Canyon Road was closed for the season. Are there residents who plow it themselves?
Yeah. In fact, I'm an avid user of that road in the wintertime. It's one of my favorite places to run. It's just absolutely gorgeous down there. A gentleman by the name of Rick Sutherland, the Sutherland family, they're the people that have that ranch that's right back, the cattle guard, when you kind of almost get to Mormon Flat. And they've been plowing that road themselves for years. And I think what was a challenge, last year we closed that road in the wintertime, so this would be the second winter. But what was happening was Mr. Sutherland, you know, he and his family are plowing the road, so most people would assume the county did that, and they just start driving down there thinking it's going to be open. They get to a point, usually at his property, where he stopped plowing, and then they try to turn around, and to do so, they go slightly off the road. You know, they're just trying to, there's not enough space, and then they get stuck. And so this was happening on a pretty regular basis, and so last winter, we have to do this every winter as a temporary closure. We close the road for the winter. You give the residents, like the Sutherlands and the other, there's just a handful, but you give them a key so they can get through the gate, and then they continue to plow that road for their own use. But then, of course, we as citizens, like, you know, myself as a runner on that trail or someone walking their dogs, we benefit from that. So it's actually a pretty nice relationship, and we're all working together collaboratively on it. And so, yeah, the Sutherlands are the ones actually plowing it.
Okay. Wanted to ask you about the election certification. The council certified the election, and you noticed that the undervotes could have flipped the races for county council. Was that the case when you ran?
You know, it's funny you say that because I don't think so. I believe this race was so close. I mean, you know, hats off to all of the candidates. They ran great races. But even in council seat A, which was Tori Welch versus Roger Armstrong, that was remarkably close. Certainly when you looked at Ari Ioannidis and Megan McKenna, they were within 1%. So I've never seen it that close. And then I think in the end, I mean, you might know the number better than me, Leslie, but I think it's like 350 votes or something that Megan won by. And there was like 1,400 people that just didn't vote in that race. They voted in other parts of the ballot, but just not there. To me, that was interesting. Like, you talk about every vote counting. I mean, what a perfect example of had everybody voted, if depending on what they wanted, but you could completely have a say in what that election result was.
Okay, anything else you wanted to add?
No, just thank you, you know, for having us on. And everybody, you know, if you have a question or something, you can always email us. We have a county website and our email addresses are on there. We obviously can't respond back on open applications, say Dakota Pacific, which we get a lot of emails on, but we do read them. So please send them in and we'll get to them as soon as we can.
Okay. Candace Hart, member of the Summit County Council. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, the Park City Board of Education met Tuesday, approved another $38 million in bonding for athletic facilities. The president of the school board also had a district patron who attempted to give public input on a story that had been published this week in the Park Record removed from the meeting. Joining me in studio, I have interim superintendent of schools, Caleb Fine, along with school board member Meredith Reed. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
You know, I did watch some of the meeting online after hearing about how Alicia Gorder, a taxpayer and a parent, was treated at Tuesday's meeting, attempting to give public comment. She came to the meeting early. She was the first one to sign up to give public input, but then passed over, and it wasn't until she realized that public input was over that she found that her name had been crossed up. She was allowed to come to the podium. So what happened there?
Yeah, we had a difficult public comment, Leslie. Anytime someone has to be asked to stop speaking and then ultimately was asked to leave, that's not fun. But our board meetings fall under Utah State Code, which they're public meetings. They're for board business and fiduciary responsibility. And then procedurally, our board has historically said, hey, we do want to allow public comment. They're specific to three things, the board agenda. And then there's three things that are not allowed, which is it's not a complaint session, it's not a personnel session, and it needs to be specific to the board agenda. So in this situation, the board chair who runs the meeting felt like those things were, there was a compliance issue there procedurally. Public comment is not guaranteed. It's something we like. I think what's most important is that doesn't mean that board members don't want to hear from you or I don't want to hear from you. We really do. The method for that I would recommend is email, or I'm always available for a phone call. Those things can be scheduled through the district office as well.
So you're saying that the action that was taken was appropriate?
It falls under our procedures, which are listed on our website. If you go to the board agenda, there's a public comment procedures, and those are the procedures we follow.
Yeah, and just given that a board meeting is a public meeting. It just seems to me that if somebody does have something to say, that that's the best way to let everybody know about it instead of just you and maybe specific board members.
Yeah, I mean, it's to protect all of our employees. It's a magnified meeting, and these procedures are in place to protect everyone and make sure appropriate avenues are followed.
All right. Well, let's just get the district's response to the article that was published in the Park Record, just kind of outlining, you know, district salaries that are paid to a couple of employees. And when we heard from Board President Andrew Kaplan that he was going to express his displeasure to the Park Record for what he said are the inaccuracies in that reporting. Can you identify what those inaccuracies are?
Yeah, I'm not surprised you're asking that question. We're not going to talk about that today, but those things are coming. Thanks.
Okay, we'll hear more about this.
Mm-hmm.
Can you answer whether or not Chief Operating Officer Mike Tanner and Business Assistant Lori Pierce are similarly compensated to other district administrators?
I'm not going to talk about that today, Leslie.
All right. If the district CEO is out of state all summer, do we need a full-time COO? Do we need to look at that?
We're always looking for opportunities to create efficiency and improve. We have 4,297 students. We're forward-focused, trying to make sure that our students have the best possible experience, and we're not going to stop looking for opportunities to improve and create efficiencies until all 4,297 students and all 8,500 approximately parents and guardians can say that they're having a positive experience in our school. So we're going to continue to look for opportunities to improve our systems, but specific personnel issues, it's just not something we're going to talk about today.
Meredith, can you answer me does the entire school board take part in budgeting and signing off on things like a $50,000 pay bump for an executive assistant, or can that be done unilaterally by the board president?
We have participated in there's the collective bargaining that goes on with the unions for the pay. And then the board approves whatever the percentage increases is. We don't all participate in that bargaining, mm-hmm. because that would be cumbersome. Mm-hmm. So the people that do, the board members that have participated in that, just come back to the board with a blanket, here's the percentages that will be raised for the employees based on what we vote to approve or not.
Yeah, so when you see a $50,000 bump in a single salary, does that light up the eyes of the business administrator?
Well, all of these employees are not on, you know, individual contracts. They are employee group members. So we have classified employees, administrative members, and licensed staff, which are primarily teachers or teachers on TOSAs, teachers on special assignments. But all of these raises were in line with what the board approved for these employee groups. So if you look and see percentages per classified, licensed, and administrative, they're all going to be in line.
All right. So other administrative assistants should have seen a decent pay bump as well.
Yeah, they did. The board was very good to our educator support professionals, which was, yesterday was Education Support Professional Day, so it was a great opportunity to celebrate them. But really excited that, you know, they did increase all starting salaries to $20 an hour, for example. And ultimately, that resulted from both a 16% raise and a market adjustment that was made to all education support professionals.
All right. Substitute teachers, though, they don't get much.
Substitute teachers are not paid as much as our actual employees. We use a contracting group to fill those roles, and they do make more than most substitutes in the state, is my understanding, but no, they do not make as much as our licensed staff. That's true.
All right. One more thing I wanted to ask about this, because the station, KPCW, previously reported on, and School Board President Andrew Kaplan confirmed on the local news hour that former Superintendent Jill Gilday's contract terms changed between 2023 and 2024. Here at the station, we don't recall that ever being discussed or showing up on an agenda. So did the school board vote to add that auto-renewal clause and double her severance pay?
No, the board did not vote for that, and I don't know where that came from in that contract. So that's a question that remains unanswered.
So can the board president legally decide to change it by themselves?
The contract has to be in either the consent agenda or publicly disclosed. It has to be. So that contract cannot just simply be edited at some point in time. A superintendent or business administrator contract, which is with the board, does have to go through, if it's changed, it does have to be at least on the consent agenda. Sometimes it's up for discussion.
Okay, so it sounds like this may have not been up for discussion. It was on the consent agenda, and maybe the contract wasn't pointed out that, look, these are the changes in the contract?
Correct. We never discussed any changes to that contract.
The entire board?
The entire board, yeah.
But the superintendent certainly knew about it. And do we know who else knew about it?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was not involved in that, but likely board leadership typically is involved in those conversations. It gives them the consent agenda, which does have to be voted on by the board.
All right, let's move on. Lots of other business to take care of. The school board passed a calendar option that includes the Jewish holidays, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, as holidays for next school year. You did hear from district employees, though, also wanted fall break to match what other school districts have, as many of them don't live in Park City. So why not provide another calendar option?
I think this was a challenging issue for us, and we did take the input of the calendar committee, advisory committee that met. That was of teachers and administrators who worked on this issue. There's not one wonderful, perfect answer for this. So this was a test year to see how this goes, and we can adjust going forward if we need to.
Yeah, but I think we heard from the board say that they also wanted a calendar option that provided all those. So you didn't, who was on this? Were any board members on this committee?
No, board members were not on this committee. It was made up of teaching staff from Park City Education Association, as well as the Education Support EIG and the Park City Classified Association came forward with some models. I think in the board meeting prior, kind of discussed what that would look like. And it can be done, right? Hypothetically, anything can be done. It comes at a cost of what else. So the board moved forward with the recommendation from the calendar committee, which is not a perfect recommendation. Even the calendar committee said, like, you know, there's a lot of options. But I think that the Jewish holidays are something that the board wanted to prioritize. And I'm really grateful that our community was able to support that. And I think we'll learn this next coming year if this is the right model moving forward.
Well, and you know, we call it fall break, but it's historically been known as kind of the UEA break, and that was because there's like a conference that all of these educators are supposed to be at instead of down south.
There is no more conference because the Utah Education Association quickly learned that everyone just wanted the time off, and I don't blame them. So I still call it UEA break as a student here. That's what it was when I was here, but it has moved to fall break because there is no conference anymore.
All right. Let's move on to the athletic master plan. Phases 1, 2, and 4 were all approved. Again, the school board passing another $38 million in lease revenue bonds. That brings the total of lease revenue bonds up to how much now?
I don't have that number off the top of my head. You know, fortunately, lease revenue bonds were at a very competitive rate with general obligation bonds, so not taking on high interest rate loans, which is wonderful, and really excited about the opportunity these facilities are going to give to our students moving forward and our community.
Yeah. At the same time, it feels a little bit like the school board on a spending spree with a taxpayer's credit card here. I mean, is there some limit as to how much and how often the board can approve lease revenue bonds? Again, because there is no bond election with these. There's no say from the public in terms of whether or not they want to pay for these athletic facilities or maybe give teachers a raise or substitute teachers an increase in pay.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, is there a limit? Well, the board members are elected, and that's a way to speak to it. But I know that the board wants to be very efficient with finances, and they are not looking to overspend our community's money.
Absolutely. This was... we have an amazing business administrator. Randy Upton really knows his job very well and is very experienced in how this works. And so he assured us that we would be able to create these bonds without increasing taxes and within our budget the way it is now. So that was something that was very important to us. You know, taking the feedback from our community about what we need to make sure that our sports facilities are adequate and match what other communities have as well. That was... hearing from the parents and hearing from our kids that aren't able to do what they want to do or have to travel and not have home games because of the limitations that we have here. So we are very mindful of the budget and of what our community needs.
The new tennis courts, does that mean that we're going to see some freeing up of tennis courts then at the PC Mar? Because I think that's where they play, yeah?
Yeah, with those tennis courts, our student-athletes should be fully supported, which we're really excited for the first time in the history of our district to be able to. And maybe I can't actually speak forever, but to my knowledge, the first time we're going to be able to bring those student-athletes and to offer those options for our PE students as well. I'm really excited to give them the opportunity to play tennis and maybe a little bit of pickleball.
All right, can we kind of run through the timeline for these phases? I mean, what happens when?
We've got tight timelines that we're going to work very hard. Our primary goal is to get our softball and baseball fields online in the fall. That's going to be the tightest and most difficult timeline. And of course, we love snow. We wouldn't mind some really good snow melt on that area come March. That will be a factor in those timelines. And then following that, we'll also likely be able to get the tennis courts online earlier in within the first year. And then after that, eventually Treasure Mountain will be scheduled for demolition, and we'll be able to bring on the two full-size turf fields, which is very exciting for our lacrosse programs, our soccer programs. I can even see flag football becoming an option that we're able to offer to students in the near future. So that's about 2 years out, and then it will wrap up with re-turfing Dozier Field probably towards the end of the project. Also included is resurfacing the track at Park City High School, and that's going to be an early priority as the track is quite aged and has some significant issues.
All right. School board also voted to keep enrollment in the district closed. Can you explain that? I mean, I thought that, I mean, we just had expanded area spaces. You'd think that there'd be plenty of room for everybody.
Well, I think we are cognizant of that. Things are shifting, and we're just kind of wanting to see where it lands a little bit more before we open up for enrollment, potentially or not. There's also you just had the conversation with Candace about Dakota Pacific. If we have, continued development and building in our community and more families move here, then we'll still, be filling our classrooms. So we're just it's more of a wait and see than make a change and then, oh, that wasn't the right change, so.
All right. So how can it be that some grades have open enrollment while others are closed, just due to the number of kids in the classroom?
That option can exist. It's not required to exist. But, yeah, based on space alone, we could say this grade or this classroom is open up to a certain capacity. And I think once we have students in our district, I mean, our teacher, our admin, the board has always said we don't want them to leave. So the idea is let's get through realignment. Let's see what happens with some of these major developments that are spoken of. And I think the board had a lot of wisdom in their decision to make sure that we settle before we fill our buildings to the brim.
All right, so we don't have classes then that are open at this point?
Correct. No. The board said fully closed at this
fully
time.
Fully closed. Okay, finally, Ecker Hill Middle School's mascot changed from the Timberwolves to the Miners. Are we confusing things here?
No, we're aligning things here. I think we're reducing confusion. So we had teachers from our Ecker Hill and Treasure get together and talk about what was the best way to integrate our new schools. This will be the first time, how many years?
Yeah, it's been since Treasure and Ecker came online, right? We had two middle schools, so it's really exciting to be one community mascot in our secondary schools.
Absolutely. Our teachers are fantastic and worked hard and listened to the students and took a lot of input and really thought, you know, what is it that's going to reflect this new school, this new community? I mean, it's our community, but the new thing that we're having that we haven't had for a long, long time, and that aligns with this identity of the high school as well. And then a lot of our club sport teams are already identifying as minors, so it just seemed to make a lot of sense to keep this uniform and all of our junior high and high, or middle school and high school kids will be the same mascot.
Okay, and that's what happens next fall then? We've got 6th through 8th at Ecker, and we've got 9th through 12 at Park City High.
And they will all be minors.
All minors.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
I just want to say it's November, it's gratitude. As cliche as it is, I've never felt worse after practicing gratitude, so I want to encourage all of our parents and families to talk about what they're thankful for. And Leslie, thank you for letting us come online. It's always something I look forward to.
All right, Park City Interim Superintendent of Schools, Caleb Fine, along with Board of Education Member Meredith Reed. Thanks.
Thank you.
The annual Create PC Holiday Makers Market opens tomorrow. In the studio with details, I have the Executive Director of the Park City Summit County Arts Council, along with one of the participating artists, Mark Maziers. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Jocelyn, maybe just start by telling us about the market, when and where?
Sure. So yeah, the Create PC Holiday Makers Market is launching tomorrow night. So it'll launch right at 5 p.m., right in time for our party. And we're inviting the public to come out and really celebrate our local creative makers. We have the most makers represented ever in the history of this program. We have over 80 local creative entrepreneurs who are selling cool creative product. Many of them don't necessarily have their own brick and mortar stores. So that's really why the Arts Council does this program, is to support that creative sector, you know, that creative person that lives here who's looking to make a living through their creative endeavors. And we have so many cool things. We have cookies and chocolates and tapenades and jams and apparel and woodworking and ceramics and what am I forgetting? Jewelry. You walk into this store, it's a little bit smaller of a square footage situation than we've had in the past. Those of you who might be familiar with this program, it used to be called Brand PC, and we've hosted it in many different pop-up locations since 2016, actually. Most recently, it was at the Outlets. But this year, you know, the Arts Council has acquired a space, a temporary lease over at 1500 Kearns Boulevard. It's a space right behind Tupelo and Wells Fargo, and we're in there for the next 3 years, and we really want to lean into this space and make it a home for our local creatives. So that is where it is located, and we just encourage everyone to come out tomorrow night, but it'll also be open for the next about two, the show will be open for about 2 months. It'll be open through January. So this is hopefully your one-stop shop to immerse yourself in all of the local creative talent. Literally every single person that is represented in this show is a local, and you can feel really good about your spending, right? Because not only are you putting dollars in the pockets of your local creatives and keeping you know, that local economy fueling, but 15% of every sale also goes to our nonprofit. So hopefully when you're doing your holiday shopping, you can feel really good about it.
Okay, so Mark, you've participated in this for a few years. Are you a member of the Create PC, or do you do your work offsite?
I do my work mostly at home. I shoot the photographs in town typically, and then I do the work at home. So I think a studio upstairs would be really cool, but I can't quite justify it yet.
Yeah. And you're obviously known for your landscape photography, and you're still doing that, but you've kind of, you're still kind of following that trend that you were doing. You're kind of digitally refining them somehow?
So typically what I've been doing, I've got a few different projects going on. The one right now that I'm most interested in is, it's a series I call Dreamy Park City. And it's more like dreamy, ethereal, more less representational parts of Park City. So like it's setting a mood. It makes you think a little bit more rather than like a really clear shot of Main Street where you see all the stores and all the people walking. It's a little more... It's the more fine art aspect of my career that I'm really enjoying.
Okay. So how helpful is this to an artist like yourself to have a market like this?
This is everything. I've been lucky enough to be involved for quite a while, maybe all the years. Mm-hmm. And it's a big part of my year. Like it's especially now that we're doing 2 months, it's going to be great. It's one of the things that I really enjoy about it is that it's a chance for me to experiment I started doing these little 6 by 6 inch photo blocks, I call them, and it's a chunk of wood, and then it's got a photograph mounted to it and then epoxy over it. So it's a really different presentation that I've ever done. And that idea I came up with maybe 3 years ago, and I started experimenting with it, and I've been tweaking it over the years. And if it weren't for the maker's market, I never would have come up with it. So it's like an incubator of art.
All right. So do you have to be there all the time when the market's open?
No, but I love going as much as I can because it's great. Like, I love talking about art with people, and people, the other artists are always bringing in new stuff, so it's fun to check it out.
Okay, you'll be there tomorrow night, though.
Oh, yeah, it's like top five party of the year.
Okay. Let's quickly get to the gallery stroll, Jocelyn. This is happening the last Friday of the month.
It is, the last Friday, so the day after Thanksgiving. So those of you who are staying in town and have family coming in, this could be a really fun activity to get your friends and family onto Main Street. We have 13 participating galleries that participate in a gallery stroll every last Friday. It's 6 to 9 p.m. There are a handful of galleries that are off Main Street. There's the Jago Gallery in Prospector, and then Create PC is also in the association, so you can head there. And they're actually running a really cool opportunity, the Gallery Association is. If you attend in person, you can enter to win a Black Friday $500 gift card to the gallery of your choice. So this is a special running for this specific Friday, November 29th, 6 to 9 p.m. Again, just step foot into a handful of galleries, put your name on a list, and you could enter to win a really amazing gift card to buy some local art, which is awesome.
Okay. What's the latest with the Summit County Arts and Culture Master Plan?
Yes. So for those of you who aren't familiar, the Arts Council, we're kind of shepherding forward an Arts and Culture Master Plan. Some of you may remember we did a master planning process called Project ABC back in 2018. And this, our goal is really to deepen and ultimately replace our existing countywide cultural plan that was done in 2018. You know, there was so much change and the sector was completely rattled during COVID-19. And so that really sped up the process for needing to redo this vision for the future. And so right now we're entering into our community engagement phase, and the consultants that we're working with have just released a survey, a community survey. It takes about 8 to 10 minutes, so you know, it takes a minute to go through this, but it's really important that we have the community participate. This is a big picture community plan. We're thinking not only about arts and culture development and opportunities in Park City, but we're thinking all the way out to the reaches of Colville and Hennifer, Peowa and Oakley. This is a county-wide plan, and we're grateful to both Park City Municipal, Summit County, and also the Chamber of Commerce for supporting this effort. So people can find this survey on two different websites. If you go to pcsearts.plan.com, or it's on our homepage of the Arts Council, pcsearts.org. We have a goal of gathering 1,000 surveys by the end of February. It is translated in English and Spanish. We're going to be doing a lot of focus groups and public forums to try to get the community involved. But it's really important that our residents are driving the vision for this future. You know, what do you want to see? Do you want to see more public art? Do you want to see more performing arts? Do you want to see more cultural facilities that don't currently exist? Right? Do there need to be more cultural hubs throughout the eastern part of the county because there's a concentration on the western side? These are the things where we want people's thoughts. And it's a really great survey. I know surveys are sometimes annoying, but this community from other places that I've lived is one of the most engaged communities I've ever lived in. And usually we actually get really great survey participation. So please visit those websites and check out all of our planning efforts.
Okay. And then finally, in our last minute here, so tell us about the Gondola and Snow Globe Art Stroll.
Yes. So we have partnered with the CVMA, Canyons Village Management Association, and HPCA, so Historic Park City Alliance, to cultivate local artists to create unique designs for a public art stroll in two different locations in Park City, one at Canyons Village and one on historic Park City's Main Street. On Friday, you can find 6 gondolas that are filled with these unique sculptural treasures, all created by local artists. And it's a really cool art stroll. A lot of these gondolas have opportunities to kind of find treasures, scavenger hunt. It's a great family opportunity, and they're really whimsical and fun. So if you head to Canyons Village, you can check out these 6 gondolas. And then starting on Thanksgiving, you can find these really massive life-size snow globes that are new this year, The interior of the snow globes are crafted unique designs by local artists. All of these snow globes, both the ones at Canyons and the ones at Park City Main Street, all have the theme of Olympic legacy to celebrate the new 2034 bid. So we just encourage everyone to engage. The ones at Canyons will be up through the ski season. The ones that'll be on Main Street will be a much more limited time. I believe they're going to launch on Thanksgiving and go through January 3rd. So please visit those. There's going to be QR codes so you can learn about the local artists who created these really cool artistic visions. A really great way to celebrate our not only our Olympic legacy, but the arts and culture sector here in Park City.
Okay. We'll see you tomorrow. That's Park City Summit County Arts Council Executive Director Jocelyn Scudder, along with one of the participating artists at the Holiday Market, Mark Maziarz.